Everyone, welcome to The Final Four is Not on the Schedule. I'm your host, Eric, alongside with expert analyst, Rod. Thanks for joining us on the best MSU basketball podcast featuring an in-depth recruiting, game matchup, and post-game analysis. We dive deep to give you the best tools to enjoy the Spartans and impress your friends and family. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod, and we're here after Michigan State's 70-52 loss to Notre Dame in South Bend today in the I guess the finale for the Big Ten ACC Challenge, the last year of it. And good riddance, I guess, if this is how it's going to look. Michigan State played quite a gauntlet of games at non-conference, eight games. I guess one was easy against Northern Arizona, and the rest were very challenging, where they had just came back from the West Coast in Portland, a very late game on Sunday night on the West Coast, getting back to East Lansing Monday, I'm guessing probably 4 a.m., and then traveling down to South Bend for this Wednesday night game. So it was before the season, we looked at it and said, you know, if they go 4-4, not terrible. We'd be probably fairly, you know, happy with that. Maybe not happy, but satisfied. And 5-3, not what you hope. But if you look back, the last four games, they've been without Hall and Akins. And so it's been pretty impressive in some ways to look at that, who they've played. Almost beat Gonzaga by one on the aircraft carrier. Great, you know, highlight game for the season, college basketball season. Then you have the defeat of Kentucky in overtime, double overtime in the Champions Classic, and then getting 2 out of 3 out in Portland. So overall, not a terrible showing. And again, it certainly looked like tonight, Michigan State just looked like they didn't have legs. Everyone outside of Joey Hauser looked really tired. You have, guys in Notre Dame who have no business beat us down the court on fast breaks, you know, outrunning us down for transition baskets and stuff.
Put everything else aside, and there were tons of other examples of it, but when is the last time you saw not just a team beat Michigan State down the floor like that, but a team that doesn't really run?
Yeah, I know.
Because Notre Dame doesn't, believe it or not. You might be surprised by that if you watch the game, but they don't. They clearly, Mike Bray is not a dumb guy. I mean, I think he's a decent coach. I don't think he's a great coach, but a decent coach is certainly good enough to recognize what, frankly, if I'm down, I'm not really that down about this game, believe it or not. I was far more upset about Portland and Oregon than I was this one.
Yeah.
But I am kind of upset at ourselves in this one, because we really should have emphasized the strong possibility that this would be what's called a scheduling loss. And I think Mike Bray understood that that was likely. And certainly when he saw the way Michigan State was moving, or rather not moving, he would see that. And so he had guys leaking out and took advantage of it. MSU kind of shut that off in the second half, but I think they got beat three times in the first half by my count. If I cared, I would go back and confirm that, but I don't. So we're going to go with my anecdotal impression. Yeah, the scheduling loss, you know, it's just that simple. I think Michigan State had dead legs. And I also think that, you know, and this is the part that people don't, I think, fully appreciate. And I can't even say, even playing sports, in my lifetime, I've never been through an experience like they've been through. I've never been through travel like that. And I think that it also impacts you mentally. And Michigan State looked completely out of it mentally as well. They just weren't recognizing anything. And, you know, Notre Dame runs good offense. I would, that's Mike Bray's strength. That's always been his team's strength. But come on. That was a team that looked like it just didn't have anything physically or mentally. And so when that happens, you know, you're going to get that, and then put it together with the fact that we did get this part right. We talked about Notre Dame as a shooting team and said, hey, they're only kind of middling good so far, but that's because two proven shooters have been horrible. Well, we mentioned it's always possible that they find it, because these guys have done it in the past.
Yeah.
Well, enter Cormac Ryan, came in shooting, I think, 22% from three. He was 6 for 7 tonight and had a perfect night going until he missed his last one with like a minute to play. So, you know, you put those two things together that Notre Dame, frankly, a team that hadn't played a good game yet this season, even though they've only lost one, they've played tomato cans and they barely managed to win most of those games. And then they lost their last one to St. Bonaventure by double digits. They hadn't played well yet this season. This, I'm sure, was a game that Mike Bray had them clearly ready for. I thought, you know, Notre Dame, quite frankly, the last thing I think of in connection with Notre Dame basketball is physicality.
Yeah.
But I thought they were very physical tonight, which tells me that Mike Bray really had them amped up for this one. You know, that this is the simple fact. I mean, if you're a Michigan State fan, sometimes you lose sight of this because you have the myopia of only paying a lot of attention to Michigan State. But Michigan State has a target for a program like Notre Dame. You know, they are a target. They're a big name program. And if you can beat them, that means something, you know? And I think it looked like all of those things. It looked like an amped up Notre Dame who hadn't been playing well at all, who, you know, finally decided to play well, and a Michigan State team that just had no response. And that part of it, I can't get that exercised about, you know?
Yeah,
they just didn't have it, and you just kind of chalk it up. And there'll probably be a night or two in the Big Ten. I haven't gotten into the teeth of Big Ten scheduling yet, but usually during the course of the season, there are one or two nights like this where you're playing your third game in 7 days, something like that, and it happens to be in West Lafayette. Well, you're going to get – we've seen that before, right? You see it every year. You're going to get your doors blown off, usually. You know, and then on top of all that, add in that MSU is still down two guys. I don't want to spend a lifetime here making excuses, but just understand what happened here. And I think what you said at the outset, keeping things in perspective, is very much my mode of thought with this. They're 5-3, which at the start of the season I would have taken in a heartbeat, even if they had been at full strength. The fact that they've played the last half of those games down two of their top six, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay with where they are. You know, the important thing is get those guys healthy, just something to give people a little bit of optimism. You did see that Jaden Akins dressed tonight. He did not play, which was consistent with what I'd heard. I was actually told this afternoon he was out. From someone who would know.
Yeah.
And then they dressed him. He went through warmups, but clearly they didn't play him. And there, God knows, after the first 5 minutes, there was no reason to play him.
Yeah.
But my understanding is, call this an educated guess. I think it's highly likely he will play against Northwestern.
Yeah.
So expect to see that. So at least they're getting one guy back. And I'm telling you, especially tonight, but really you can even look at the games in Portland. The difference, for as much difference as having Jaden Akins and Malik Hall makes on offense, it makes a ton of difference defensively. You will see a team that looks very different on that end when those two guys are back. So they'll get Jaden back likely this weekend. They will have to get through that game, the Penn State game, and maybe one more non-conference game. And then I think there's a reasonably, as long as nothing gets derailed, pretty good chance that after that, you have Malik Hall back.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's when you can start really getting exercised about how they're playing to a serious extent, you know, when they've got their full deck of cards back.
Yeah, and it was hard to understand out there, or I guess to recognize what the problem was on offense, if it was just dead legs, if it was, I think Notre Dame was playing pretty good defense. They were definitely denying Michigan State the three opportunities.
Here's the thing. It looked that way. I agree. Notre Dame was staying in front of people. Notre Dame's a terrible defensive program. They're terrible this year. They're terrible essentially always. They are a very reasonable facsimile for Fran McCaffrey's Iowa. That's who they've been. They're usually pretty damn good offensively. They usually can't guard anybody. And that's been the case so far this year, too. Nothing's different. To my eyes, Michigan State did not have the requisite energy to run their stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they just weren't moving. Tyson Walker squaring up on Dane Goodwin? Come on. a straight Tyson Walker is going to dust that kid.
Yeah.
He couldn't do it tonight. And that's, I'm sorry. I have to conclude. Now that's, you know, you want to call that making excuses. Fine. I know what I see. And I just think, again, to me, that goes back to tired legs. The fact that so many shots were short, they weren't converting even shots at the rim that you would expect them to convert. It's all the stuff you expect to see when you're exhausted, except, and I haven't looked at, I don't know if you have the box score in front of you.
Right,
I don't.
Now, yeah.
What were the turnover numbers for MSU? They weren't huge, right?
So Michigan State, so Notre Dame had 6 turnovers. Michigan State had 8. Hogard with 3,
yeah.
Walker with 2, and then Sissoko, Kohler, and
that's the
turnover.
Only thing yeah. that you normally expect to show up when a team is exhausted that didn't. They didn't toss the ball around. They had a few early, but they settled in, and you didn't see many of them. Again, it helps Notre Dame doesn't ball hawk or really pressure
sure.
you. But, yeah, I give Notre Dame credit, I guess. But a rested and normal Michigan – I don't even say with Akins and Hall. The team that Michigan State had in Portland normally would have much more offensive success against Notre Dame. I mean – I'd venture a guess 98 times out of 100 seriously, it's that, I mean, people can come at me if they want, but I know what Notre Dame is and I know what Michigan State is. And tonight you had tired legs, tired minds, and that produces bad looking basketball.
Yeah. And it was plenty bad there. Yeah. I mean, you look at just looking briefly going over the stats. I mean, obviously it was an 18-point deficit at halftime. Michigan State shot 38% from the field and 33% from three. Notre Dame shot 50% from the field and 43% from three, I think. And interestingly,
they were 8 for 13 at the half from three. I looked it up.
Oh yeah, I was just mentioning for the game. Yeah, they're 42.
Oh, for the game,
42% for the game. Yeah, and then for rebounds, they out rebounded Michigan State 30-29, which is not that surprising since Michigan State missed so many shots. But you know, Michigan State had 3 offensive rebounds.
And how many did Notre Dame have?
They had 4. So
right.
Yeah.
So that's not a huge number, right? But for Notre Dame to win an offensive rebounding battle against Michigan State, check on another indication of tired legs and other body parts.
Yeah. And I feel like it, as far as the offense looks, they looked a lot like they did against Alabama. And their results show the same. 8 assists on 21 baskets. Yeah, and so, you know, Notre Dame had 13 assists on 27 buckets.
They just couldn't run any stuff. And, I mean, give Notre Dame a little bit of credit, but honestly, I'm sorry. I don't feel like we have a problem of tipping the cap to other teams when they play well. I'm usually very ready to do that. Tonight, that team. I'll give Alabama credit for that game because Alabama actually can play some defense. They have athletes. And it was Michigan State's first game without Hall and Akins, but nevertheless, you could give them a look here. I'm just not inclined to give Notre Dame a whole hell of a lot of credit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's
for that, for the defensive end.
Sure. And I guess the only thing I would say is, you know, there was that little brief moment in the second half, Michigan State got it down to 15 and they had,
14.
I think like, they had like three
got
straight stops,
14,
three straight stops
yep.
and unable to score. And that was sort of just the,
right.
you know, they just didn't have anything. And, know, I think overall, I thought Hauser looked pretty good when he played. I thought Hogard looked okay. I don't think he came out strong to start the game, but he played better later, which seems to be sort of par for the course for him. And the inversion, you can talk about that too.
Yeah. I thought, Joey competed. He didn't play great. And again, I keep saying it. He didn't look like a guy. I mean, he played hard, but there's a difference between having the will to do it and having the physical capability to have playing hard translate to doing things you normally do. And he didn't have that. I don't know what did he end up with scoring wise?
12 points.
Yeah. So he was okay. But, you know, Joey Hauser, we know, is capable of playing much better than that. Oh, yeah. I actually, and I'm sure AJ had some mistakes, and I don't know what he ended up with from the floor, but I thought AJ Hogarth was the one guy that you could say you were reasonably happy with. Because he competed. Mm-hmm. I liked his compete level a little more than I have, certainly than I did in Portland. And the one thing which you just alluded to that I think the only good thing that came out of this, other than nobody else getting hurt, was Michigan State early in the second half went on several possessions in a row with an inverted post game where they had AJ posting up. And they were successful with it. He scored two possessions in a row. I think he might have missed on the third, but that is something that I've been talking about for, God, at least 15 years, that I wish Michigan State would do more of. And I always refer to this. It's my evergreen comment in this on this subject. I thought for as great a career as he had, it, in my opinion, at least, which doesn't count for anything, but I thought it was a little bit of a missed opportunity that they didn't do that more with Denzel Valentine.
Yeah.
Because I thought Denzel Valentine had so much size for the position he was playing that he was almost always going to have a physical advantage over the guy guarding him. And I just thought that was, over his career, that was something Michigan State didn't do enough. Well, AJ Hogarth, has similar size. He's not quite as big as Denzel, but he's close. But you can see he's actually got a post game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a disaster down there. He knows what he's doing. And that's a card I would really like to see Michigan State play frequently. And I don't mean like 8-9 touches a game, but I mean every game they run it a couple times, especially maybe in situations where you feel like you just need a bucket. If you can get the right matchup there, you get AJ posted without, especially without a good rim protector in there to come over help side, that's gold. And I think Michigan State can do it effectively, especially when Hall's back, because you have two options in Joey Hauser and Malik Hall that you can run that inverted post game with where they're the guy making the post feed. And if the guy guarding them wants to come down and try to help on Hogarth, well, then you've got a shooter spotting up in on an easy angle, what should be an easy angle for AJ. So I would like to see more of that. I thought that was good. It was a nice adjustment by Michigan State to go to it. And I'd like to see more of it. We see hints of it, but usually when we see it with AJ, this season at least, it's he kind of dribbles himself into that spot. This wasn't that. These were actual plays where he was posted up and was the recipient of an entry pass. So I'd like to see more of that.
Yeah. His final numbers, he played 33 minutes. He was 5 of 13 from the field, 1 of 4 from three. And a lot of those threes were just, you know, someone's got to shoot the ball. There were not many scores of the four, 4 of 4 from the line. He again shows that he's really been good, really good for the line. 3 assists, 3 turnovers, a couple blocks, and about 3 rebounds. So, played
I thought
okay.
He was the only guy that kind of checked okay.
Yeah, I think
you know, I mean, they had a lot of guys who didn't. I mean, Tyson Walker was not up to his usual level.
Yeah.
Pierre Brooks had a nightmare of a night. Yeah. You know, Mahdi was not great. You know, gone. Hauser. Basically, they didn't have anybody who really guarded well, but AJ was probably the best of the bunch. So he's the one guy that I thought I'd kind of give, you know, some kudos to. Because he found a reservoir of energy which nobody else seemed to have.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You definitely saw Izzo about 10 minutes in that first half flailing, just trying to find anyone who could do something on the floor, and just there were no answers anywhere on the bench for Michigan
State. Yeah, you just and that's just how it's going to be until they've got a full complement of players. You know, when Pierre Brooks and Jaden Akins are your 6th and 7th man, okay. Then you've got a couple guys that you could say, hey, we can turn to somebody if it's not happening. with the starting lineup, and they can come in and actually really do something. Right now, yeah, you're going with two freshman bigs, and you know, Jason Whitens, who competes and can do some things. I'm not saying he shouldn't be in the rotation somewhere, but let's be honest, he's certainly not going to be able to give you offensive burst. We know that. And then Trey Holloman, who again, I think has a world of potential and I think can help you in a certain role. But if he's one of your top guys off the bench and you're asking him to try to score, I don't know that that's going to be very successful, at least not yet. So they need to get all the dominoes back in order, you know?
Yeah. Well, we'll be back at it this in a couple of days as Michigan State prepares.
You don't want to review the keys?
The keys to the game. I haven't had.
We can move through them real quick.
Yeah, guarding the arc, that didn't go well. Cormac
disaster.
Ryan.
Yeah.
Yep. Athleticism.
No energy and what we talked about. I want to give myself or give us credit for at least getting that part right. That we did kind of have a little bit of a premonition that the what did Wirtz shoot from three?
Wirtz. Let me get that. The one good thing is Starling was 0-for-7 from three, so that was one.
Boy, and see that shows.
Wirtz was 2-for-4, so he shot.
Okay, 50%. So he and Ryan combined, who were the guys who were struggling, were if my math is correct, 8-for-11. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I know we talked about it. Said these guys are going to bust out at some point. You just hope it isn't the night you're playing them. Well,
guess
that's what Michigan State got. I'm surprised by the Starling number because. My thought about him, and it goes to show you when, especially a game like this, where you lose a little bit of focus because it's so awful.
Yeah.
I thought Starling looked every bit the part of a one and done. What did he end up with scoring wise? He had to have had a.
So he had played 32 minutes, 6-for-14 from the field, 0-for-7 from the three, 2-for-3 from the line, 4 rebounds, one of those offensive, a couple assists, a couple blocks, a steal, and 14 points.
Yeah. I thought he showed a lot.
Yeah.
That block, that weak side help block he had at Tyson Walker was a hell of a play. Showing off his athleticism and his timing. And I liked the way he went to the rim. I mean, he's a good player, and I knew that. I saw him a few times last year playing alongside Jeremy Fears. So it wasn't a complete surprise. But yeah, I thought he was really good. But, yeah, 8-for-11 from guys who had both been struggling. That's, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, some days.
and Michigan State just wasn't in shape to contest that because a lot of those shots were wide open.
Yeah. All right, next, number two's key was athleticism. You know, it didn't really make a difference.
That again.
It was neutralized by fatigue.
Yeah, and that's where I will ding us because we should – have seen that coming, and it was in retrospect it was very obvious with the travel schedule, not just the late arrival on Monday morning, but you're also coming back across the country, so you have the time zone difference. And again, these are just facts. You want to label them excuses, okay, but they're facts. And you basically had, I don't know, one, maybe 24 hours in East Lansing, give or take, maybe slightly more. Let's call it 30 or so before they had to get to South Bend. So, you know, certainly not much time to prepare for Notre Dame.
Nope.
Not much time to get yourself back physically and not much time to readjust from all the travel. So, The athleticism advantage didn't show up at all.
Right. And I would just say the time zone change from west to east is really tough, 3 hours. And
I
so
agree.
That's, you know,
it's worse than the other way.
Go the other way. So number three, I'm, you know, trying both of these. So turnovers, we said they were pretty even. I think we should have some early turnovers that just kind of ice the game a little bit. They got a couple to go the other way later, but.
But that's the thing, though. We talked about it. We said, you know, the way Notre Dame defensive rebounds, there probably won't be a big advantage there either way. And there wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 4-3 Notre Dame on the offensive boards. So not a big difference there. The thing we said Michigan State couldn't afford to do is allow there to be a big advantage in the turnover area. And there wasn't. So that's not where this happened.
Get old, stay old. I guess that just showed the senior leadership. And I think, you know, Notre Dame did that. They saw a team that was wounded, and they just finished them off. And I think that was, you know, to their credit, they did what they had to do against a Michigan State team when they had opportunity.
Yeah, I thought they played. They looked like a veteran team playing a very smart game.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and they probably really needed it because, again, they had been very poor to start the season.
Yeah. And the fifth key to the game, late game situations. We'll mark that out as NA, not applicable. Right. So.
Yeah. Okay. Capital N / capital A.
For sure. So again, Michigan State will be heading into Big Ten play on Sunday against Northwestern. And then back at the Breslin Center. So hopefully they can kind of get themselves right. And we hope to see Jade Akins at least play, come off the bench probably.
This is where, you know, look, if you had to pick, and it doesn't work that way, but if somehow Michigan State had really given it everything, they somehow found a reservoir of energy and battled through this one, but then laid a stink bomb because they were truly exhausted on Sunday, well, I wouldn't take that trade. So what you hope is it's short travel time. They'll be home tonight, you know, and then you got Thursday, Friday, Saturday to get ready for Northwestern, who had looked pretty good and then laid an even worse stink bomb than Michigan State did in this event by getting just run out of their own gym by a Pitt team that I thought was the worst major conference team in America. Maybe not. I don't know if Northwestern is either, but it was hideous. So I don't know what Northwestern, we'll talk about it, obviously, we'll talk about it, but I think, you know, don't worry about this. To me, this is one you just, you know, the old cliche, burn the tape. I don't know that there's anything to learn from this.
Yeah, I think except to
I felt like there was a lot more to learn from the wins against Oregon and Portland than there was this loss. Because this, to me, was really easy to identify. And Izzo's not going to treat it that way, for the record. He's going to kick their tails. But my view, it's whatever.
Teaching opportunities, perhaps, for the coaching staff. They'll have stuff to talk about and, you know, try and take away some good points they saw. And then, again, try and just forget it and just move on to the Big Ten season, which we hope to kind of start making a run. I think Michigan State is still going to be very competitive in the Big Ten. I thought it was going to be a little bit easier path than what it looks like now, because there's some really good teams that look like that. That I just wasn't sure about it. And it certainly looks like a lot of them are pretty good.
It's a deeper league, no question.
Yeah, I think so. There's little doubt about that. So we'll be back to talk about that game. And I suppose if you have a chance, go to our website, thefinalfourisnotintheschedule.com or tffinots.com. There you can sign up to be part of our Spartan community, either on our forums or you can just get on our email list where we have special offers. We have something going on brewing pretty soon. Also, since Sunday is the first Big Ten game, you now have just a few days left to get into our t-shirt challenge. The t-shirt design has been finalized, and we'll get that out to everyone in a little bit. And so then you can, if you predict the order of the Big Ten from 1 to 14 for the end of the season, you'll be eligible to win a t-shirt. And just make sure you leave your name, obviously, with the email. You can send it to me at eric@tffinots.com. And make sure you put down how many points you think Michigan State will score against Hunter Dickinson and the Michigan Wolverines this season. And I guess with that, I probably just call quits for this episode. So without further ado, until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.